Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to our study on the virtual Beis Medrash. Very nice to see lots of friendly faces from our neighborhood, and a great special privilege to learn Torah together with all of you. As we know, this week's Parsha is a double Parsha of Tazria Mitzora. And the Parsha of Mitzora talks about something that we are not so familiar with. It's a very unusual phenomenon that we don't really know too much about. But what I'd like to do this evening is take some of the important messages out that are still relevant to us today, even though we don't really have so much familiarity with Mitzora itself. So the Parsha starts off by saying, V'zos tiyeh toras ha-Mitzora. And this should be the laws that govern one who is a Mitzora. And the Gemara Maseches Erechin Daf Tesvav Amud Beis says, what does it mean when the Torah calls this person a Mitzora? It seems that Mitzora is really a breakdown of some other phrase, and the Gemara tells us, Zos tia toraso shel hamotzi shem ra. The understanding is that we assume that one who is in Mitzora is because he was motzi shem ra. It's because he spoke in some way negatively about other people, and therefore his punishment is going to be that he is now going to become a Mitzora, and he will now badad yeshev michutz lamachana. He is now going to sit alone outside of the encampment without anyone else, without all of his friends, who normally give him the opportunity to share evil thoughts about other people. The Gemara then goes further and says, kala misaper lashon hara, somebody who is engaged in the practice of sharing evil discussions about other people, negayim bayim alav. He can be sure, as the Gemara learns from a pasuk in Tehillim, that he will be afflicted with tzaraas. So the Tiferes Yisrael on Mishnayis, who was one of the foremost commentaries on the Mishnayis, asks, Miyamai tamati, he says, from the time I was a young child, I've been wondering, Alha de'ein anu noagim taras mitzara bizman hazeh. I've spoken to a number of dermatologists, and they've told me that they have seen some kinds of skin conditions, different variations of it, where people have something that seems very similar to what the Torah describes as tzaraas. Now the question then becomes, why is it that we have not seen anyone who observes the laws of tzaraas? I'm sure many of us have had some kind of skin irritation over the years, and we should assume that maybe it has some kind of connection to tzaraas as the Torah describes. Well, therefore ask the Tiferes Yisrael on Mishnayis, why is it that we have never heard of anyone in our times who observes the laws of tzaraas? And this is something that he says, V'zacharti yamim mikedem, and he says, as I think back in my memory, I am reminded, Shebi Aldusi, that when I was a child, Hitzati Timihasi Zu Lahagon Rabbi Akiva Eger, he says, I asked this difficult question to none other than the great tzaddik, the great leader, Rabbi Akiva Eger. Veheshivani, and when I posed him this very important question, he answered, Shagam hu tama al davarzeh, that he too has been wondering, why is it that we don't observe the laws of tzaraas today? Why is there no such concept as a mitzora? Vishein lo teretz hamakubel al hadas. How do you like that? The great Rabbi Akiva Eger, when he was posed this question by a young child at the Tiferes Yisrael, before he became famous for his commentary on Mishnayis, Rabbi Akiva Eger said, I was stumped, and I am not exactly sure what the answer is. What is the approach? Why is it that a Mitzora who finds some kind of spot on his body today, and a dermatologist will look at it, and then show it to a Kohen, why should it be so difficult to deem this person a Mitzora? And that is the major question that we need to ask ourselves. I am sure it is not because nobody in our generation speaks Lashon Hara. I'm sure it is not because nobody speaks Motzi Shemra. To the contrary, in our generation, we have far greater mechanisms that give us the opportunity to speak Lashon Hara and to spread Motzi Shemra. We have social media, and we have WhatsApp, and we have so many different venues that give us, unfortunately, an amplified opportunity to spread evil thoughts and evil words about other human beings. And therefore, the question really needs to be asked, why is it that we do not observe these laws today? The Tiferes Yisrael then says that perhaps the reason why is because if you look through the psukim in our parsha, you will find that one of the critical components is that at the end of the process of the Mitzora becoming Tohar, he needs to shave all of the hair on his body. That needs to be done by a Kohen. However, today that we don't really know who the Kohanim really are, there are very few families of Kohanic dynasties who really have the ability to trace themselves all the way back to the original Kohanim. How many Kohanim today are really able to say with certainty that they are bona fide Kohanim? And therefore, he says, if we don't really have a Kohen that we know with certainty is a bona fide Kohen, then how are we allowed to shave, say, for example, a man is not allowed to shave the hair that grows by his peis. The only reason why a Metzora is allowed to do that is because the Torah specifically instructs him that in the process of becoming pure, that is what he needs to do. But if we don't have a Kohen who is able to say with certainty that he is a Kohen, then the Metzora has no right to violate that Avera of shaving all of his hair. And therefore we assume that there is no reason to go ahead with the laws of Tzaras today. There is no reason to observe them because we do not have anyone who is a bona fide Kohen who can walk us through the process of Tahara. Then he gets into a discussion. Well then, that may be true, but what about Tzaras Batim? What about this phenomenon that is described in Chumash of finding some kind of tzaras, some kind of spot on a home? I would imagine if we would all walk around our homes, we would be able to identify something in our home that looks like tzaras. Maybe it looks to us like it's moldy. Maybe it looks to us like it just needs to be cleaned. But maybe there would be something that we'd be able to find, and that would be an indicator that tzaras has stricken us as well. Well, there he explains as well the reason why is because who is able to stand up and declare this home as a bayis hamanuga? Well, the Torah says one of the requirements is that we need a Kohen. And today, because we don't have a bona fide Kohen, because we don't have anyone who can say with absolute certainty that they are Kohanim Vadaim, therefore he says, what right would somebody have to instruct another human being to knock down their house because they assume that maybe they are a Kohen and maybe they have a right to tell someone that their house is inflicted with tzaras? And therefore he writes, this is something that we do not have the ability to observe today when it comes to nigei batim, certainly, and when it comes to nigei adam, when it comes to tzaras on a person or tzaras on a home, we do not observe these laws in our generation. This really is a question that dates all the way back to the Zohar HaKadosh. And this is a question that the Zohar asks, as well as the Shalah HaKadosh, and also, more modern times, the Chafetz Chaim brings this into the discussion as well. It should not come as any surprise. After all, the Chafetz Chaim is the one who popularized the laws of Shmiras HaLashon. And the Chafetz Chaim therefore gets into a discussion about why is it that we find so many people who speak Lashon Hara today, and yet, even though they are engaging in such talk, in such speech, we don't find that they are inflicted with tzaras. And this is something that the Chafetz Chaim is troubled by. And he also tries to deal with this discussion that the Tiferes Yisrael started. But again, this is something that we should give pause to think about. Maybe on a technicality, we are not inflicted with tzaras today. However, we should think about the fact that in the days of yore, when all of the mitzvahs HaTorah were observed in their most pristine state, we would have a phenomenon called tzaras. Tzaras, the Gemara says very clearly, is an onesh, is a punishment for Lashon Hara. And now, I'd just like to bring to everyone's attention an amazing comment that has inspired me from the Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer Shmiras HaLashon. So he writes the following, I'm going to read his words. Ube'emes lepele hu be'enai. The Chafetz Chaim says, to me, this is astounding. Sheteva b'nei Adam. And if this was the case 100 years ago, the Chafetz Chaim died in the 1930s. If this was the case in his generation, it certainly is the case multifold today, where the Chafetz Chaim describes that there is a phenomenon that people are always being mechapes segulos ubrachos me'anashim gedolim. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, people are so caught up with all kinds of segulos. I'm sure all of us have received all the segulos in the world that everybody has sent around. I am not a mekubal, I am not a tzaddik, I am not a Talmud Chacham. I have no idea whether these skulas are real, whether they are fake. I don't know who made them up. I don't know if they have sources. I'm sure some of them do. I'm sure many of them don't. But either way, says the Chafetz Chaim, skulas are something that really take the interest of people. And certainly when they go through a difficult time in life, they look for skulas. They look for somebody who's going to give them the secret. What is it that they could be involved with that would help them be saved? And writes the Chafetz Chaim, it is astounding in my mind. Lepele hu be'enai. This is amazing to me, this phenomenon, that people want a skula for all kinds of things. Lahatzlacha al ha-parnasa. People want a skula because they want to be saved from some difficult illness, because they want to have children, because they want to be granted a parnasa, because they want to have nachas from their children, because they want to have a shidduch in the family, whatever it might be. So many people have things that make them look for skulas. And he says, Mayo ilu lahem kol haskulas v'habrachas. Ask the Chafetz Chaim. One can engage in a million and one skulas. You can find every skula in the world, and you can read all the skula books in the world. And yet, he says, of what good is any of that? Im chas v'shalom, humurgal bazeh hachet, shalashen hara urechilus. What are all of the skulas in the world going to help if one is engaged in lashon hara or urechilus? It will not help. After all, the Torah says, there is an arur mefurish batorah. After all, the Torah explicitly states that one who is involved in this kind of conversation is cursed. As the Torah says in Sefer Dvarim, Arur make re'ehu basaser. What does it mean that you hurt somebody privately? How can you hurt somebody privately? Well, there's a very simple way. Rashi there writes, Im hayushomrim l'dvarai, Rashi says that you go behind their back, you say something negative about them, and ultimately you can really damage them to a point where it's very hard to repair that damage that you have caused. Well, says the Chafetz Chaim, you can try every skula in the world, but if the Torah itself declared on you, Arur make re'ehu basaser, cursed is the person who behaves in the manner in which you are behaving, then of what good are all the skulas? They will do nothing up against the curse that the Torah itself prescribes for a person who is engaged in such behavior. There is an amazing comment in the Sefer Chovos HaLevavos. And the Sefer Chovos HaLevavos dates back to the Spanish philosopher Rabbeinu Bechaye Ibn Pekuda in the 11th century. He says an idea which I would say if it wasn't written in such a credible source like the Chovos HaLevavos, you wouldn't believe that it's a Jewish concept, but yet this is what he writes. And the truth is this dates back way before him as well. It goes all the way back to the Sefer Magid Meisharim. Magid Meisharim is a fascinating Sefer that is written by none other than Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, who had a Magid. He had some kind of angel that used to come and study with him at nights. And the Beis Yosef recorded those conversations, and he then writes what he learned from this Magid. So the same thing is written in the Sefer Magid Meisharim, as we find it as well in the Sefer Chovos HaLevavos. And they write the following. V'amar echad min ha-chasidim. One of the wise, righteous men once taught that harbe b'nei adam yavo lidei cheshbon. We are all afraid of that day when God is going to make a din v'cheshbon, a calculation, an accounting with all of us, a detailed accounting for everyone. And you're going to get there, and the conversation is going to begin. And much to your surprise, he says, you will have a very positive surprise. Yimatsu b'sefer zichuyosam. You will find that you have all kinds of merits, shalo asu osam. God is going to have an accounting for you of wonderful things that happened in your life that you know you had no involvement in. V'yomru, and in all honesty, you will humbly turn to God and say, listen, I appreciate that these are going on my cheshbon, but the truth is, halo lo asinu zeh. It doesn't seem, when I think about my entire life, when I review the moments of my life, doesn't seem to ring a bell that any of these were a major part of it. So I don't really understand where this comes from. V'yoshivu lahem, and God will respond to you. Osam shesipru aleichem ra, heim asu elu hamitzvos. This is the Chovos HaLevavos. This is not folklore. This is from a very credible source who writes that those who spoke evil about you had all of their merits taken away, and they now go on your account. And the Gemara writes the same goes in the opposite direction as well. This is a startling comment. So although it's true that Lashon Hara is something that maybe is not punishable today in our generation with Tzara'as, people don't go through that process of Taharas HaMetzora today, but at the same time, as we know, Lashon Hara has very dire consequences. Lashon Hara, as we know, is something that the Chafetz Chaim dedicates an entire sefer to. And that was a groundbreaking work. And that is something that we all need to study and we all need to think about. But especially given this backdrop of what the Chovos HaLevavos writes, that when one is engaged in such activity, we don't worry so much about whether or not Saras is going to afflict us in our generation, but what should trouble us more is the fact that this makes a difference in the din v'cheshbon. If one does an avera during their lifetime, we all make mistakes. That's the way life works. Ki hu yadai yitzreinu, God created all of us. He understands that we all have an inclination, that we all have challenges, that we all have difficulties. That is okay. That is why God gave us the process of tshuva as well. But at the same time, when we make a mistake, we can do tshuva. When we speak lashon hara, says the Chovos HaLevavos, we need to think about the consequences that lie within whatever it is that we say about another human being as well. We need to think about the ultimate accounting that we are going to have to think carefully about when God adds up and tallies up all the accountings not only of our own experiences, but also of those who we may have spoken evil about as well. Now, what is clear from what we have discussed is that Lashon Hara is something that we need to be very careful about. Now, I'd just like to segue a little bit into something that is not exactly the same, but something that also is about speech and how careful we need to be. This is not so much about talking about others, but it's about how we appropriately share negative information. So we turn our phones on right after a three-day Yom Tov, and we're in the middle of experiencing this pandemic, and we are all petrified because we know how many WhatsApps are unfortunately about to come in to inform us of how many great tragedies took place over Yom Tov when our phones were off. And the same experience repeats itself every Matzoi Shabbos, or every morning for those who are blessed enough to turn their phones off at night. You have the same experience every day. And the problem is that we don't think carefully enough about how to appropriately share negative information. And the truth is, the Mishnah writes in Pirkei Avos, Hafochba v'hafochba dekulaba. When you look carefully enough throughout all the pages of the Torah, throughout all of Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh, you will find that there is something that guides us in every aspect of life. And this question is no different. The Torah itself guides us in how we are supposed to share negative information. Let's take ourselves all the way back to Parshas Vayera. And there the Torah says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam talks to Avraham Avinu and he says, Kachna es bincha es yechidcha asher ahavta. God drops a bomb on Avraham Avinu and he says, now is the ultimate test of your life. Now you have to take your son, yechidcha, your beloved son, your only child, asher ahavta, who you love with a passion, who you love so much, v'haleu sham le'ola, and I want you to bring him as a sacrifice, as a karban. Now Rashi writes that Avraham Avinu was unsure which son God meant. After all, he knew that there were two children. So was it supposed to be Yitzchak or Yishmael? God says, then I'm going to qualify the statement a little bit more, as yechidcha. And he says, who is the yachid? Who is the special son? I have one wife who has a special son. I have another wife who has a special son. Each one of them is special to their mother because they are each and only child to that mother. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally says, I mean your son Yitzchak. And Rashi asks, Lama lo gila lo metchila? Why couldn't God just be a little clearer with him? Why couldn't God just be a little more direct? Why does he have to beat around the bush and say, it's this, it's that, and give a whole bunch of different descriptions of what it is that he wants Avraham Avinu to do? Just tell him straight. Avraham Avinu can handle it. And Rashi says the answer is because one has to be careful when sharing negative information. And yes, Rashi calls this a difficult piece of information that was shared with Avraham Avinu. One has to be very careful not to startle, not to shock, not to frighten the person. You have to sort of ease them into it. Now, I don't think a father can ever be ready to hear such news, but at least HaKadosh Baruch Hu eased Avraham Avinu into the conversation, and he got to it slowly. And from here, we learn that when one shares negative information, there is an appropriate way to do so. You need to share it slowly and appropriately, and you need to make sure that the people who are listening to it are able to handle it. And the Gemara gives a number of examples. It's a Gemara Msachim Daf Gimel. It's a Gemara Meseches Yuma Daf Ayin Zayin. The Gemara Meseches Yuma is fascinating. There the Gemara says that each of the Malachim has his own avoda, has his own job that he is required to do by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there the Gemara says that once, on one occasion, the Malach Gavriel was told to take a gachale esh. He was told to take a brick of fire and to throw it on the city of Yerushalayim. It was to be a great punishment to the Jewish community living in Yerushalayim at the time. Gavriel faithfully did his job, as he always did. And Gavriel returns back to heaven and he says, Asisi shlichusi, I have done the job that you have asked me to do, which is what a faithful servant should say. And yet the Gemara there describes how there were claims against him. How dare you share such negative information? How do you spread? How do you speak? How do you publicize such a terrible thing that you just destroyed Yerushalayim by throwing a brick of esh, a gachale esh, on the entire city? The Gemara says, don't we know the Pasuk says in Mishlei, Umotze diba huksil. One who goes around spreading negative information is considered to be a fool. He is considered to be a ksil. The Vilna Gaon has a fascinating insight where he writes that the Gemara Maseches Brachos contrasts two different pieces of information that you can hear from a friend, where the Gemara says that when somebody is informed that a wonderful thing happened in their family, the Gemara there writes, Al Besuras Tovos, when we are informed of something good, we make a Bracha HaTova HaMetiv. Al Shmuos Ros, when we hear something negative, obviously the Gemara says, we make a Bracha Dayan HaEmes. And that is a terribly painful bracha to have to make on certain occasions in one's lifetime. And yet, the Vilna Gaon writes, you'll notice there's one very subtle difference between the way the Gemara describes something good and something bad. The Gemara there says, when we hear about something good and we're supposed to make a bracha of HaTova HaMeitiv, we are informed. We have a Besura Tova. Somebody came and informed us. However, writes the Gemara, when we talk about a Dayan HaEmes, that is described as a shmua ra, because people who are responsible don't go around spreading that information. It is just a shmua. You go here, you go to the supermarket, you hear, you overhear something. It's not something that people are supposed to be sharing with one another. It is not a besura. It is not something you're supposed to go out of your way to share. It is something that, if you happen to hear about it, you make a bracha of Dayan HaEmes. If you happen not to hear about it, you're better off. You don't need to hear about every single terrible tragedy that goes on. And this is a tremendous challenge in the age, in the info age in which we all live. It's a time when we turn on the news, when we look on the website, and we just read about one tragedy after the other. It's important for us to know what's going on in the world, but how important is it for us to know about every single tragic situation that goes on in every single community? Now, why is it that we are not supposed to share negative information so freely? Rashi says the reason why is because we don't want people to be overwhelmed by it. And the Chida explains, because if somebody hears too much negative information, yis atzev, they will become depressed, v'yimayit ba'avodas Hashem. How am I going to serve God? How am I going to believe in Him when I hear about so much tragedy in the world? And this is something that is not only a nice idea that is discussed in the Rishonim, in the Achronim, but it's something also that has a real, actual, relevant nafkamina lahalacha. So if you look in the Mordechai, in the end of Meseches Moed Katan deals with a lot of the unfortunate circumstances of Avelus, and there one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, one of the Balei HaTosis writes that there is no obligation to even let family members know when their closest of kin has passed away. That is a startling comment of the Mordechai, that not only is the comment of one of the Rishonim, but it is quoted lahalacha in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Yerodeya, Misha meis lo meis velo no dalo. If somebody has a relative who passed away and they are unaware, there is no obligation, writes the Shulchan Aruch, to tell them. You do not need to inform them, even if it is one's father or mother. Now, the Ramah qualifies that and says, well, then who's going to say Kaddish? So maybe it's a good idea to tell the child in order that they should be able to recite Kaddish. That will be helpful to the situation. But outside of that, he says, there is no reason. And therefore, the Pischei Tshuva there on the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch argues that when you have somebody who unfortunately passes away on Yom Tov, since there is nothing to be done right now, there is no reason for anyone to be informed. Why would you ruin their Yom Tov? Why would you share negative information if there is absolutely no toeles at all? Rabbi Avadia Yosef's son, who is now the Rishon LeZion, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, records the story about when his father hid the information from his own wife, from Rabbi Avadia Yosef's own wife. Her brother had passed away. Rabbi Avadia was concerned that if she's going to know that her brother passed away, it would really damage her terribly, both emotionally and physically. And therefore, the story is, as he records it, he remembers that his father, who was well aware of that death, and they were very close, did not inform his own wife of the death of her brother because he was looking out for her own good. There's a story that I once read, an amazing story. I don't know if it's absolutely true, but it's a story that I once read in a sefer on Hilchos Avelos, that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, when he had a brother who passed away in America, his brother who lived in America didn't have means of communication with the rest of the family in Russia. So the way that they used to communicate was, they would send letters. So the brother used to send letters to his mother, but then he passed away. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was in Europe with his own mother, was concerned that his mother is going to figure out. She's now no longer going to receive letters. She's going to figure out that her own son dies. And the story goes that for 13 years, he forged letters in the handwriting of his own brother. He wrote about all the goings-on in America that he knew nothing about. He did it in the name of his brother, signed his brother's name, and wrote his own mother letters because he was looking out for her own good. An amazing story that obviously you need to think about very carefully when it's appropriate and when it's not. But so much so, the Shulchan Aruch writes, if a closest of kin is not informed of a death of someone who they are close with, and that is totally justifiable, you don't have to inform them. If that is the case, the Shulchan Aruch says, even if I'm making a simcha, I'm allowed to invite them. Even if I know, and I know that that information is being hidden from them, and I know that they're supposed to be sitting Shiva and they are not, only because they simply are not aware of the loss that they just suffered, writes the Shulchan Aruch, I would be allowed to go ahead and invite them to a simcha and have them participate as anyone else. There would be no concern at all. That is all the case. However, the Sefer Hasidim writes, as quoted by many Achronim, if there is any toelis in the people being informed, then one must go out of their way to let them know. So for example, he says, Yosef was told, Hine avicha cholet. Yosef was told when he was king of Egypt that his father Yaakov was not well, that his father was sick. Why would somebody share such negative information with Yosef? What is the point? What is the objective? And the answer is because there was a toelis. Yaakov very much wanted his son Yosef, who he loved so much, to come and visit him. And the only way that that was going to happen would be if Yosef was informed that his father was on his deathbed. And the same goes for anything that is a toelis. So normally, when we inform family members of negative information that may have taken place, they have the ability to be helpful, either to arrange a levaya, to arrange a kvura, to help out with the shiva, to help publicize the word that other people should show up and give kavod hames, to help do something that will be a toeles for the situation that we are now facing. And therefore, that is the reason why, if there is any tzorach today, we go out of our way to share that information, because we want to make sure that everything that is going to be a kavod for the person who has the loss is going to be done. I remember a number of years ago, and with this we will close, there was a woman who had spoken to me about the death of a family member. And she was so distraught over the fact that she said, as this family member was unfortunately coming closer to their demise, the other family members were not honest with them about the condition that they had. And she said that now she felt so guilty over the fact that she was dishonest with the family member. And we were talking about this back and forth. Obviously, they did it because they knew it would totally destroy the spirits of the chole if they would be told the truth about their condition and where it was up to and the prognosis. So after a couple of months of this discussion, the next time Rav Asher Weiss was in America, I brought this family to meet with him and to discuss this issue that was really troubling them. And he said at the time that this is something that he himself had done the very same. When his own wife was sick, He said, sometimes you have to know the patient, and you have to know what they can handle. And you have to know that sometimes it's better not to share all of the information that you know. Not that we should lie, but sometimes it's best for the patient themselves, not because I want to be dishonest, but because I love them so much, and that is the greatest way to love them, is to save their emotional well-being. When I told this over to my father, and about this discussion, he pointed out to me that this really is mentioned in the Shaf. The Shaf in Yerudea writes explicitly that sometimes it is for the betterment of the chole that they not be given all of the relevant information, because you never know what that can do to them. Obviously, this has to be weighed very, very carefully, but it gets back to the original point. There is an appropriate way that we need to share negative information. And sometimes when we talk about Lashon Hara, like we speak about in this week's Parsha, we describe not only what we say about other people, positive or negative, but we think also about the times that we need to be very careful and sensitive about how we share information in general, who we share it with, how much information we give over, and are we doing so in the most appropriate way possible. I now give over